Okay, you're very welcome once again to the podcast, the RT political staff here gathering on the last day of the Dáil. They're rising for the summer today. They're breaking up. TDs are heading for home. Around about 4 o'clock in the afternoon here, and there are very few left here in the house. However, your political staff are still here, Micheál Lehan and Paul Cunningham, along with myself, Joe McGrady. And it's been an interesting day, Micheál. Leader's Questions was very much about the end of term and the opposition really taking it to the government about what they haven't done in this term.
Yeah, and what they're not going to do, I suppose, really is the point of criticism now, and that is the cost of living package. The opposition adamant that many households are still struggling, government saying inflation has levelled off somewhat. And of course, this is the time that they have chosen where they're going to phase out those cost of living one-off measures, which were such a key part of budgets since COVID. And of course, then because of inflation, and then you suspect going into an election cycle. But of course, the elections are gone and there is an economic backdrop worrying one internationally. And I think that particularly is being cited by government as the reason why they won't continue this time. Equally, they always knew this was going to be challenging. And as difficult and as unpredictable as these economic headwinds are, they do provide a degree of cover for government, and they're sticking to that very much despite the trenchant criticism.
Yeah, it has always been the case, Paul, of course, when they were saying that these were once-off payments and they were once-off assistance with energy bills, etc., etc. I recall the opposition warning then that, you know, you're using money that you won't necessarily have further down the road and all the rest of it. And then it's turned right around now where the opposition are saying people are entitled to these things. You should be giving them to them.
Yeah, it was a once-off measure, which then became a second-time once-off measure, and on we went for a while. And that was because we did have high inflation and there was a sense that people were really under pressure and the government had to intervene. But at some point, it was going to be taken away. This seems to be the point. And what the opposition parties have done Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is come back and said, you're not living in the real world. You might have a headline inflation rate, which is stable, but anyone who's going to the shops is getting cleared out. And in a few months' time, they're going to try and heat their homes. And guess what? Ireland having one of the highest electricity prices in the European Union, they're going to get whacked again. So the headline figure doesn't relate to what people are experiencing on the ground. And for that reason, you should roll it over once again. An awful lot of politics being played. I mean, some of the language was quite choice today. Jennifer Whitmore, the Social Democrats, talking about these guys. Epic, wasn't it?
Epic wasters.
Not epic wasters in time, epic wasters in opportunity, epic wasters of people's cash, saying that when it came down to it, you gave universal electricity credits to the rich, to the people who had holiday home, if not holiday homes. And what they should have done was make it targeted, which is rather interesting because Micheál Martin yesterday was claiming that Sinn Féin wasn't in favour of targeted measures and that he would be holding Mary Lou McDonald to account when this came back up again. Mm-hmm. So a big hullabaloo this week. And one thing that's guaranteed amid all the noise is that when the Dáil comes back in September, guess what? That debate is going to be back.
Jennifer Whitmore also said, didn't she, feckless and reckless, which has echoes of Matty McGrath's famous description of state regulators as fruitless, toothless and useless.
It struck me that there was
never to be forgotten.
There was good preparation put in by the opposition in what they were saying today, given that it was the last day of the term, Micheál. I mean, Piers Doherty was already, when he launched into it, he had his all of his facts mustered in relation to the number of people, the increasing number of people in arrears with their energy bills and with their gas bills.
Yeah, 300,000 people with electricity, 175,000 with gas. And then he uses the term, he says, and you're about to swan off for the summer without making a commitment on the cost of living. And Jennifer Whitmore, equally scathing. Padraig Tobin, a long list of statistics ranging from housing to crime statistics. He essentially concluded that the only thing that is available, perhaps at an even lower price, kind of was the implication, is cocaine. Which of course is worrying in the extreme. Mm-hmm. What led to the Taoiseach retorting in fairly colourful terms himself, saying that he had his own scorecard for Padraig Tobin and grading him very high on sarcastic name-calling.
Mm-hmm. And it struck me as well that Taoiseach was ready for that insofar as he was able to give a list of all of the things that they have done. He named off he named off free
books.
School books, he named off
childcare,
VAT on electricity, expansion of the fuel allowance, which kicks in September.
Yes.
But I suppose all of that does pale away when you think that there were in the last budgets despite the difficulties people were under, was about €1,000 per worker, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Which won't be there now.
There's very few people who didn't see that little credit on their electricity bill December, January, February, indeed, who didn't notice it. Yeah. And I think that's something that the opposition recognised. They're going to try and capitalise, and it's up to the government to be able to explain and show that.
Don't they have a good argument, though, from the government point of view, that we have Donald Trump at the White House? We thought it'd be 10%. Now it's a threat of 30%. It could be 200% on pharma down the road, which would have a disastrous effect on
Ireland.
And
it could be back to 10% tomorrow.
Or it could be back to 10% tomorrow. But, I mean, the argument, the uncertainty is there. The government are able to capitalise on that. Certainly Simon Harris, that was what he was saying today.
And he will continue to say it. I mean, it is a difficult situation we've got. We believe the summer economic statement, which gives you the size of October's budget, due to be announced next week.
The envelope,
but we're not quite sure if that will be the case. National Development Plan, they've got the budget still coming, and in the background, all of this noise. How can you actually be emphatic and plan when you've no idea what the future might hold? Like, it is a dilemma, and that's what the government is trying to do, is to say that everyone sees Donald Trump. He wakes up in the morning, it's not 10%, it's 30%, and they're able to say, like, we have to just be careful. We've been careful before during COVID, we'll be careful again, we will get through it. Pascal Donoghue, the finance minister, trying to be that reassuring person, while at the same time saying those one-off measures, we just can't do it, and we can't do it now. I mean, some interesting debate. One of the things, I didn't actually get to the bottom of it, Micheál, was, and there was a claim by one TD that the price of milk, was a litre of milk, was now more expensive than a petrol.
Sinn Féin yesterday, yeah.
But was it true?
I don't know.
Nor do I. There's something to do for the weekend.
It depends whether it's a branded milk or a non-branded milk. I think there's a bit of a difference in the price, price differential. Sinn Féin had a bit of a malfunction as well in terms of Super Value and who owned Super Value. Simon Harris made some mirth out of it today in Leaders' Questions. Can you recall that?
It was glee. I mean, basically what Simon Harris was suggesting was that Piers Doherty didn't know that it was an Irish company which is doing things like sponsoring GAA Sports, a community company, and saying, and if you didn't know that and you can't operate Google, then forget about it. So it was that type of combative tone which was being taken there. So Simon Harris was giving as much as he was getting, an awful lot of noise. But usually in these things, public sentiment counts. And I think people will be just on their own budgets being a little bit careful amid all this noise. And then the closer it gets to the darkness of winter and having to heat homes, for those who don't have A1 rated homes,
and I'd say very few people,
fear kicks in.
Very few people in the country would not recognise that bills are going up, that shopping prices are going up,
Pascal Donoghue will say, but wages are also going up. And so that's what I mean. Like, people are hearing all of these different ideas, but what they'll be doing is looking at their own budget, and it's sort of closer to winter that people will, I think, be making a call on it.
People think by feeling, as they say.
Yes, indeed.
Who said that?
The poet Rilke, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's something that people can look up
again. Yeah.
And indeed they can email us their observations on that particular quote on yourpolitics@rte.ie. Speaking of potential economic damage, Paul, you've been covering over the last couple of days the Israeli settlements in the Occupied Territories Bill, otherwise known as the Occupied Territories Bill, which is much easier and runs off the tongue much easier. Yeah. And basically, the narrative we heard in the last 24 hours is about the potential economic damage that this bill will do for very little real impact.
Yeah, I mean, I was writing a blog on it earlier on this week where, in political terms, when this house and houses have been talking about the Occupied Territories Bill, let's just call it the bill, it's been framed with the opposition saying that the government needs to broaden the legislation to make sure that goods and services are applied, and that B, it should be done much faster, and possibly the TDs and senators should sit through August to get the bill done as quickly as possible. So that narrative was challenged in two ways. The first was that there was representatives from the Israel-Ireland Alliance and also members of the Irish Jewish community who came in and said the interpretation, whether intentional or not, is this is anti-Semitic. It's targeting Israel, no other country, and this is therefore anti-Israeli, and you guys need to wake up. That was one thing from people like Alan Shatter, the former Fine Gael minister. And then yesterday we had a delegation in from IBEC, the employers group, and they said two things. One was that if it came to goods, just banning them, they have labels, it's something that could be done very quickly, the amount of trade is minimal, but still there is a concern among IBEC members that the reputational damage could be significant. The second thing they had to say is if you expand it to include services, this is a nightmare, because no companies know all of their clients. They'll have to go through each and every individual client to find out whether or not they have a liability. They also say that a reputational damage is much higher, and many companies who have interest in the US could fall foul of US laws which prevent a boycott of Israeli goods. Now, today's Thursday, and the Irish Congress of Trade Unions are out, and they're saying the arguments being presented by the employers, they don't stand up in either Irish or international law, and they say there's scaremongering on this issue. But you did have, there was a new level of interrogation of the OTB this week, and I think that was something which also drew out the Finance Minister, Pascal Donoghue, who said, we are trying to explain our intentions behind the bill to a wider audience, because there's a sense in government circles that to a certain extent it's being misrepresented.
And if it is ultimately a symbolic stand by the Irish government, Micheál, I suppose some might say it's not really a necessary one, given that the Irish government have taken very strong stands on Israel and on what's going on in Gaza, and being to the forefront in Europe of recognising the Palestinian state, of supporting the case that South Africa are taking as well. So Ireland has the reputation of already taking these stands.
Yeah, it does, but I suppose the advocates of the bill say that if Ireland were to adopt it and go the distance with it, that the other EU countries could follow, and that would set in train something that could be quite impactful and profound. And they say it is akin, they constantly cite back to the steps taken by the Dunstores workers in relation to South African apartheid, that while it may look small, it may look symbolic, it could have a ripple effect. Also, those advocates of the bill take issue with Ibeck on one particular point when asked if they except that the settlements under EU, Irish and international law are illegal. IBEC's response was that they weren't in a position to give an informed view on that.
Mm-hmm. That was something, though, that came up earlier in the week at that Foreign Affairs Committee, which, by the way, was I thought was handled very deftly by the chairman, John Lahart. But that was something that the Israeli-Ireland Alliance were asked about, whether or not they accepted that the settlements in those Palestinian territories are illegal.
Yeah, I mean, I think John Lahart did a good job. People got their spake, but
can I praise John Lahart as well?
You might as well.
Just give us a second here, Micheál. We're just talking.
But it had the capacity, given the diametrically opposing views, for this to flare up, and it didn't. One place it got a bit salty or a bit spicy was a number of senators and TDs, people like Barry Ward of Dunleary, Alice Mary Higgins, and the independent senator, just saying, do you, the Israel-Ireland Alliance, accept that this is, illegal territory, illegally occupied territory? Mm-hmm. And what the answer was coming back was Barry Ward wanted them a yes or no. This is simple. And there was a resistance to that from several of the guests. But as it went on, Alan Shetter said, no, he didn't. And that was the same response from a barrister also participating by remote from London. And so you got a sense, the gulf that there is between the sides. Mm. And I think that's going to continue to be the case.
But their reasoning is that this was, I think, Jordanian territory after the 1967 war. Correct me if I'm wrong on the history, and Israel took it back then.
Well, this is it. So that would have been in the 1967 war. But I mean, we were going 1967 war. We went to the foundation of the State of Israel. We went back 3,000 years as well. Mm. So in any of discussion in relation to Middle East and these issues, history counts, and people's interpretation of history is different. And, we could talk for the rest of the podcast, could talk for the rest of the week about it. But what you did see was that gulf. I think if you were to try and sum up, was that this sense that Irish people are trying to do, observing humanitarian situation, observing what's happening at the ICJ, feeling that they should do anything and everything they can. There was a little bit of sense that there was a pushback, and it had been flagged by Taoiseach Micheál Martin a number of weeks ago, where he said what can't happen is that you take an action which has a minimal impact against Israel vis-a-vis its policy in Gaza, but has got a huge impact on Ireland.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's where the debate is.
Mm-hmm. That's the crux of it.
A number of government TDs who were participating in that committee meeting afterwards described the week as being quite sobering, and that quite an interesting perspective. So there was just a sense, and I think it's crucial that it happens, that whatever decision you're going to take, consequences are going to flow, and you better have thought about it before you take the action. Mm-hmm. So whatever that action might be, that's up to them. But the consequences, you have to have thought about it.
It's in committee now. It'll eventually go back to the Dáil, Micheál. That'll be after the summer. If you were a betting man, when would you think this legislation will pass, or will it make that journey through the Oireachtas?
Well, I thought it was interesting that the day the Fianna Fáil signed up for the programme for government, what Micheál Martin said that day was that it was important that this has a full second stage debate in the Dáil. And I think he sees that as the next step and the important step. But of course, that is a very, very early step in the passage of a piece of legislation. So I'd expect that in the autumn. But anything beyond that and going into committee proper, I think could take a very long time.
And obviously the hope is that the war is over.
Yeah.
That this isn't something which has to get strung out. The hope has to be that somehow the United States is able to exert influence on Israel, as people would see it here as required, or as the Israelis would say, Hamas actually releases those hostages and the bodies of the dead hostages who've been held for more than 600 days, and the war comes to an end another way. But whatever way, a combination of those things, that obviously must be the hope, and I think everyone could agree on that.
It's no doubt going to be something that's going to arise in the presidential election as well. We saw this week some clarity coming to the very initial stages of the election with Catherine Connolly's announcement that she has entered and she has the backing, and she has more than the 20 Oireachtas members backing her, she says. Then so she's well away, she's well into the beginnings of this campaign now.
Yeah, it's game on. And I suppose she set out her vision in fairly broad terms, and it was broad. There wasn't any great specifics there. It was about empowering people to have their own voices, acting in the common good, even potentially giving part of her salary to that common good. She did navigate some choppy waters, and we do know from the Eddie Roach example that a presidential campaign can get torpedoed like really early on. She got through that. I mean, answering about her trip to Syria in 2018 with Mick Wallace, Claire Daly and Maureen O'Sullivan at the time, saying that it was something she paid for herself, primarily focused on visiting refugee camps, and she didn't meet anyone from the Assad regime. Also, those questions about how effusive she was in her clapping when Volodymyr Zelensky addressed the Dáil. She didn't clap as much as others. She pointed out she did clap, and she said it was war that left her nauseous when she used that term subsequently about that address, and also condemning the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but saying there should have been greater diplomatic efforts in the lead up to, but again, lacking in specifics. I think when it comes to the debate, Catherine Connolly is going to be pressed for a lot more tangible things. I know it is a ceremonial role, but it is still the top constitutional role, and I think she will be pressed to flesh out the detail of her policies.
But also fleshed out in relation to those two issues, both Ukraine and the other one. I just think that that's going to be somewhere where journalists are going to go. It's going to come up in debates. It's on those one-to-one interviews.
Yes,
it's going to be probed more deeply. And I think that's something
If there's any deviation from what was said yesterday as well, of course, there would be difficulty and there would be bother.
And I think it's a real signal, rather than making that a point about Catherine Connolly, it's a real signal about how these presidential election campaigns are run.
Yeah.
First off is, you know, the top items, but as these weeks go on, people are digging deeper and deeper into a person's life.
Yes.
And it isn't, as Micheál said, about the constitutional niceties. It's about who you are, what you said, what you're about, and then people who don't particularly like you are going to come out and say, ha-ha.
And two people are in this now. They're in this at full tilt, whatever the bit of machinations that
Fine
Gael,
well,
yeah, are involved in by fully not fully ratifying Mairead McGuinness, while the Taoiseach is telling the PP that Fine Gael, she's an exemplary candidate and they're going to give it everything to get her elected. I mean, that does seem to be a strategy that Mairead McGuinness will be out there. She'll be going to every festival and everything
every
across the country.
Agricultural show across the country all summer long. But she can't be asked really about her views because it's not quite, she's not the candidate per se yet.
It's a strategy. Yes. I'm not sure will it work, but that's what they're attempting to do there.
Yeah, because at some point there will be a journalist at an agricultural show.
Of course there will
asking
be,
asking her questions about whatever.
You know. I thought it was interesting yesterday how Catherine Connolly decided to first make the official announcement of what she was doing, that she is standing for the Oras on Rally Na Gaeltachta in the morning, which of course I had the pleasure of translating what she was saying more or less on Morning Ireland.
Praising himself. Self-praise is no praise, Joe.
The first thing was on this podcast last week was that when that you she said will
it,
declare
you said
next
it, that's
week.
Right. Micheál said it. She would declare on Wednesday. I do agree with you.
But on the Irish, she also, in her, when she walked out to the journalists after doing the Orna G thing, she also spoke Oscailga first and then Osperla.
And you see, I think that's
the first official, of course. First official language,
from,
isn't it?
From her point of view, obviously, she's a Galway West TD since 2016. She would have a very strong vote in the Connemara district, which is part of the South Connemara district, which is a big part of Galway West. By going on Rally Na Gaeltachta, first of all, I think she sends a very strong signal to Irish language speakers around the country in all of the Gaeltachts, Donegal, Mayo, Galway, and in Kerry and Waterford, that she'll be good on the Irish language, and she will be very attuned to those particular needs. So it's one of many constituencies she's going to have to try and get support from.
Absolutely, you have to play to your strengths. And so,
I'm not sure, is Mairead McGuinness a Irish speaker?
You would know more than us.
Somebody will clarify that for us, I'm sure. Who else is going to get in there?
It was also just, I thought, interesting on the Catherine Connolly press conference, she spoke about a united Ireland and the fact that she believes it's imminent but not immediate, or is going to happen soon but not immediate, and also saying she looked forward to the day. I mean, it still raises the question, when are Sinn Féin going to enter this race and who are they going to put in there? Is it possible that Catherine Connolly does somehow become the United Left candidate? I suppose that's unlikely. It does seem like Sinn Féin are going to do something. Right now, Mary Lou MacDonald is throwing shapes in that direction. That much is clear.
And Fianna Fáil then, Paul? Can you tell us, please, what is the thinking in Fianna Fáil?
No one in Fianna Fáil knows either. I mean, it looks to us is that, and this is without any evidence, so we're heading into the realm of speculation.
We never stopped this before.
But it does look that there are some within the parliamentary party who've got a very firm view that, you know, Fianna Fáil has to go out there and challenge. They haven't done it in the past couple of elections. They need to go out and stake the claim. They're the largest political party in Leinster House. Their office used to be theirs year in, year out.
What would it say about the party, they say?
Exactly. But, you know, there seems to view higher up the food chain, maybe if your initials are double M, that... Yes. Janie Mack, we just came through the locals, the Europeans, the nationals. Do we really want to horse out another £1 million on an office which we don't really need to? So there still seems some discussion as to whether or not the candidacy is there. So I don't think it goes so far as to suggest that they're definitely in or out.
No, and I think there does seem to be a preference maybe at the top, and Micheál Martin suggested that publicly, that they're not necessarily running a candidate, and if it goes very late. It is funny though, and kind of curious that, you know, it is the top constitutional position, and kind of in old football terms, the McGrath Cup was the one played first in Munster kind of just after Christmas.
Right.
In political terms, it looks like this has been, the presidency is being treated like the McGrath Cup by Fianna Fáil right now.
But neither Fianna Fáil nor Sinn Féin will make a decision on this until later in the summer.
That's what they're saying. That's what they're saying, and they're very clear in that. I just wouldn't be surprised if at some point in the middle of August, Sinn Féin make some big announcement. I think they will catch people off guard on that one.
I mean, it was interesting that Mary Lou MacDonald, when she did announce that maybe I will, maybe I won't, which was a change from her March position, which was, and it's definitely not me. So maybe she will surprise us again a third time in August with some headline. I agree with that.
Will the Labour Party surprise us with somebody?
Paul Cunningham flying back from South America to cover it.
Yeah, oh, good man. I'm delighted to hear that because I won't be around. Will the Labour Party stand anybody? Will there be any independents coming into the fray? We hear Declan Ganley's name mentioned.
So definitely no Labour Party's not going to sort of put up their own candidate. The real question is whether they're going to back Catherine Martin. We should have a decision on that Catherine Connolly by the end of July. So that one's coming there. In relation to independence, once again, there's lots of noise. But what we don't know is how that's going to land. You know, Independent Ireland, AIN2, like there's been lots of over and back, some more positive, some negative. I don't think we got clarity on it yet. But it's interesting that you could have a three-horse contest, you know, for the presidency, the top job. Is that all down to sort of the nastiness of the campaign?
Unless Fianna Fáil give a tacit nod to someone and allow people to sign nomination papers, you know?
Exactly. You know, so as in, we'll let you run, but what we won't do is give you any cash.
Right. Okay, well, look, we've come to the end of this podcast and we're going to be taking a few weeks off now.
Do you think it's okay not to mention the President's poetry offering, which is going to be set to music?
Michael D. Higgins, as we all know, is a president, but he was a poet before he was a president.
It's poet first.
And he's releasing some of his collected works.
Yeah, I think his first spoken word collection will be released to music by Clatter Records quite soon. Conor Hunt reporting on it today.
Okay, well, people can see that. If they don't see it on the bulletins this evening, they can see it on the RTE website. As I say, we're off for a couple of weeks from the podcast. The Dáil is returning.
That's a bit of misinformation now. A couple of weeks. A few more than a couple.
We'll try this a third time now. So, as I was saying,
we're leaving.
We've come to the end
of the podcast. It's a good poet, but it's not a great poet.
The Dáil is going to be off for a couple of weeks. It's back on September the 17th, I think. That's the provisional date for its return. That'll come around very quickly. And when it does, we'll be stuck right into the budgetary preparations and the presidential election and everything else that'll be coming down the tracks. Until then, thanks very much for listening. And we will talk to you all again.